The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
We are seeing historically low volume of diesel on the East Coast. What's going to happen is we're going to see a diesel price hike on the East Coast that will then lead to a diesel price hike on the West Coast. There will be rationing that's going to start in the East Coast and then go through the rest of the country. So, obviously, fill up that tank. Now, some bad news, some worse news. Average diesel price has now set an all-time high.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, coming up in a few minutes, we'll talk about that. Take a look at the record high gas prices, diesel, what it means for you, how high it'll get actually in July and August. New data out that you should know about. But if you're just joining me, I was stunned the other day. I think it was over the weekend. I got this alert, and I discovered that McDonald's has a deal just for Tuesday and Wednesday. And bottom line is, you know, they're saying, hey, on Monday and Tuesday of this week, you can go ahead and, you know, get a free McChicken sandwich. You know, there was some other item there too. If what was it again, Maggie? I'm zoning out on what it was here. The McChicken and I think medium fries was the other thing that you can get because Mercury is going in retrograde. Right. So, yeah, it's a portion of medium fries. But the deal is this, you know, in order to do this, Golden Arch is they're supposedly teaming up with a tarot card reader and an astrology expert, a person by the name of Madam Adam. I don't know whether it's a male or female, Madam Adam. And they're going to offer McDonald's inspired readings on Tuesday. But to get it, you've got to sign up. You got to, you know, post your zodiac sign and on their TikTok and their Instagram pages. So they're going to build their base there. It looks innocent. Looks like, oh, wow, it's, you know, it's a clever way to tie it into the celestial event. But really, it's quite dangerous. Dabbling with astrology, dabbling with the occult, reading horoscopes, going to palm readers or mediums and interpreting omens, this phenomenon of clairvoyance that people are so drawn to. The church is very clear. They say you've got to stay away from this. All forms of divination, the church teaches, must be rejected. Recourse to Satan or demons, conjuring the dead or any of these things is just not from God. And the catechism, just catechism 2116, if you have your catechism, highlight that. Why? Because they contradict the church says the honor, the respect, and the loving fear that we owe God alone. And the church is very clear that, you know, we have to put our trust and our faith and our hope should all be in God and in his plan for us. Not in the movement of the stars, right? Not in a horoscope, not in what some card claims is your future or some revelation from some energy spirit. The danger with this comes when somebody attempts to seek information or power through these means. And a doorway, as my guest today, Father Paul Damaris, points out, is opened. And quite often, a demon who is more intelligent than every single human being alive today combined, he knows how to manipulate and deceive you. And this is dangerous stuff. Father, it's great to have you with us today. I want to jump right back in the phones. I'm grateful for Candace, who reads tarot cards and calling in to share with us. But I want to get into the conversation. Angelina, listening in Chicago. Apparently, she's been down this path before, and she wants to share her story. Angelina, good afternoon.
Oh, good afternoon, Drew and Father. Thank you so much for having me on. I wanted to ask Father if he could give me some advice on how to, like, break free from, like, a new oppression that I've been experiencing. So I had dabbled with this, like, way in the past and then, you know, turned away from it, confessed those sins and everything. And I have had no desire to go back to it at all up until just recently. I became friends with a gentleman who ex-wife practices all this stuff, and I think possibly like put a spell or I don't know is like doing something weird, because all of a sudden I've been like really wanting to go back to it, and I like know like not to, like I know that it's not something I need to do, nothing I want to do, I don't want to do it anyway, but I just feel like obsessed with it all of a sudden, and I wanted to ask Father if he could give me some advice, because I don't want to like lead down this way again. And also since then been dealing with all kinds of weird stuff going on, like the toys have been talking in the house. Like, I mean, not like literally like, okay, Mickey Mouse, but like the walkie-talkies, like are like speaking out at night. Yeah, exactly. Stuff like that. And then my son is dealing with, like, I don't know what happened. Like, I feel like his personality has completely changed. Like, he's dealing with some, like, really serious depression and anxiety, and I'm going to get him help. And it's just, I'm concerned. You know what I mean? I don't know if it's all related at all, but I just wanted to ask if I... Either way, I don't want to go into that stuff, and I was trying to get away from that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. All right, Father, I'll let you respond.
If you could give me any advice. I don't know.
Sure. Two things. First is there are a number of priests now involved in a charismatic renewal who are familiar with the praying over people to be free from oppression, to search them out and to have, you know, and have them have a priest pray over you, have a priest do the laying on of hands and let him be free. Secondly, the Blessed Mother is our cornerstone. If Satan hates anyone more than our Lord, it's Mary. And she's our mantle. So, I mean, I'm between the rosary, between her, you know, and calling upon her, I would do that. I would seek out, you know, a priest that's familiar in the charismatic renewal with the laying on of hands and praying over people, and to be able to pray for those things. Our Lord is bringing you and ever closer to him, and that Satan is jealous of that, and he's mad at that, and he's angry at that, and he's acting like a two-year-old kid. And so it's because you are getting close to the Lord and are very close to him that stuff like this happens. It's not because you're weak or anything like that. It's because he does not want you to get even closer to our Lord than you already are.
Hey, let me just interject here, Father, because the thing she says really struck me. One, the toys or the electronics and the walkie-talkies. I know those who are in deliverance or exorcism ministries quite often, you know, those things can manifest. But then her son is now suffering depression. I just wonder if there's there's an oppressive spirit there, that confession or
that's
own
the
blessing
thing that was getting on me. Because like I feel like I was able to fight this more, and now I feel like maybe a weak spot in my son's heart. You know what I mean? Like I feel like I was able to pray myself through it, and now it's going after him. You know what I mean?
If you feel that an exorcism of your house needs to take place, the diocese does have, Chicago does have an exorcist, I can't remember his name, but he can do an exorcism of places. In the new ritual of exorcism, there is an exorcism of places that even goes beyond just a house blessing. You can do a house blessing. If that continues, then you can say, how do I get an exorcism of the place? I have done those myself in certain places to rid a place of whatever spirits are there, and that might be attacking whoever lives there, whoever is in that place. So that can happen. I would say enthrone the house to Our Lady of the Sacred Heart, and then have an exorcism of the place take place.
All right. Well said, Angelina. Hang in there. We'll pray for you. Yep. All right, and get that home blessed. Use sacramentals like blessed water and salt in it, and make sure you stay away. It's actually a good sign, Father, that this activity is happening, because she can be, I think, even more committed to the fact she does not want to go down that lane. Diana in Torrance, California, has got a comment for you. Diana, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I actually wanted to address Candace and now Angelina, because very similar stories to mine. So briefly, from a young age, I always noticed I had a predisposition toward spiritual, locutions or something. Mm-hmm. But I became very interested in occult and Ouija board and tarot as a young girl, and my parents didn't know it was wrong. And then when I began living for Christ in my 30s, I'm 63 now, renounced all that stuff, you know, I'm now a daily mass goer, et cetera. But many years... in living for Christ, I inadvertently came across tarot just in an internet search. Wasn't looking for it. It just popped up. I saw the cards. I instantly knew what each card meant without even trying. And from then on, there was another obsession with tarot, to the point where I was researching the Bible to find a way that it would be okay for me to do it. And when I realized, when I came across that spirit of divination that Paul cast out in the New Testament, and realized that just from that simple thing, a spirit had attached itself to me, I began to pray it off in Jesus' name and by the power of his blood. And almost instantly, the obsession went away. Mm-hmm. And I know now that I have to be very careful. I can't even look at that kind of stuff because I don't want in any way to open any doors. But what I wanted to really say to Candace was that there is a difference, a profound difference between when the Lord speaks to you and gives you interlocutions, and you going out and seeking spiritual information from these kind of things.
Good point.
So,
Diana, thank you.
Yeah, she seems to think. Oh, sure.
Wonderful points, Father. I'll let you expand on that because I only have a few moments left with you.
Again, it's a curiosity that brings us deeper into what it is that we're searching out. You know, and it seems it's fascinating at first. It's new. You know, we want to learn. Well, this is what happened during the pandemic when people had only the computer, and then cyber occultism took off because people had hours and hours and hours to be in front of the computer. They couldn't do anything else, go anywhere else. And so that became a curiosity for people. You know, they heard about this or heard about that, or they and so they would search it out and look at it, and they had all kinds of time on their hands to be able to explore, you know. And so that became a real problem. It still is in our culture now, finding occultism online, not even having to join cults or groups. But now you can find whatever it is that you're looking for, searching for online. I'm not saying anything that people don't already know, so I don't mind saying that, but that's what happens when you get bored. That's what happens when you get curious about something and you want to learn more and more about it. You get slowly, slowly pulled into it.
Yeah. Well, Father, first of all, Diana, thank you. Candace and Angelina, thank who are both still listening, thank you. We have a board full of phone calls. To the other point Diana made, I just want to pick something up. She talked about how she had this overwhelming compulsion, this desire to want to go back to Tara. Sure. It really struck me because I knew a man who shared a story with me one time. He had never been in, he was out in San Francisco. He was on business and he was going down a street somewhere where there was, I guess, an X-rated store, right? And he was kind of curious at some of the things that were in the window or whatever. So he walks into the store and he said to me, I'm not a man that really has any issues with pornography. It was never a big deal for me. I'm a Catholic. I go to Mass daily. He says he walked in the store just to look around out of a spirit of curiosity. He says when he left that place and he went back to his hotel room, he had to have dinner later that night. And he says, I could not stop thinking about what I saw. He said, it was almost as if there was spirit attached to me. And I was now becoming obsessed with this idea, the titillation of the pornography and the things that I saw. Just like tarot card readings or the mediums, spirits can attach to somebody, can't they? And kind of
absolutely,
encourage
absolutely.
Them and give them this internal desire to want to just read the tarot card. It's going to be okay. Just, you know, consult with the dead. It's going to be okay. Just go back. Enjoy it. So explain that if you could, and then we'll leave it maybe on that point.
Well, I mean, there are levels of spirits, and there are certainly attaching spirits, spirits that are attached to certain things with the occult. And so when you when you get curious about something, I mean, they will just let you, they'll let you go in, they'll draw you in, it'll see, look fine, it'll be okay. But then at some point, it can turn on you. And that is what happens when I've worked with people who are down tarot or whatever, is that at some point, something turns on them. And they've been so deep into it, they're so involved with that, that it almost creates this sense of despair. How am I going to get out? How do I get free? You know, because every time I try to get out, I get pulled back in, or I just can't quite get rid of it. And so the prayers of the church, confession, the sacraments are the most, Eucharist, reconciliation, and then the rosary and a Blessed Mother are ways to get through, you know, the attacks and the obsessions that come our way when we get involved in stuff like this.
Yeah. Father, thank you for being with me.
I've got a
jam show. I'd love to talk more and continue this conversation. We'll have to revisit. But as always, thanks for your insight and for sharing your experience with me. That's Father Paul DeMaris. Say a prayer for him. When I return, our conversation will continue. We got a lot still to get into, so stay with me.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app.
Well, it happened again. That's right. Early this morning, the average price of gas in our country reached another new high, this time $4.52 a gallon. The state I'm broadcasting from, that's low. If you live on the West Coast, that's probably really low. It's not going to stop there either. One researcher, J.P. Morgan, believes that gas could continue to climb north. You might be paying as much as $6 a gallon on average this summer. $6 a gallon. Yeah, you heard me right. This has been a crazy show today. That's just another crazy story, isn't it? Whoever thought we'd be paying $6 a gallon? I think it's probably going to happen. You know, we have the war right now between Russia and Ukraine. We have countries cutting their ties to Russia. That means there's less oil on the market or around the world altogether. And of course, the current administration has done zero. They've done nothing to increase production here in our own country. That, you know, it's going to take time to ramp up. But if we got that motion, it could maybe ease the pain at some point in the future. But look, we're energy independent, right? We were. I guess a little more than a year ago, the fact that they just shut down the sale of leases in Alaska and some other offshore sites because they said, there's lack of interest. Some are accusing the administration of making the terms of those leases so onerous. It's just not worth it. You know, it's just not worth the oil company's time. So they're saying no thanks. But along with that, oil reserves have dwindled. And this is a big story. It's something I want to talk about today. Why? Because President Biden opened them up in order to bring gas prices down. That worked for about 3 weeks, not significantly. But now we're supposedly running low. There's another shortage going on right now that people aren't quite aware of. This is something I've been following because this cost gets passed on to us in an indirect way. Diesel fuel, right now diesel, you see these truckers on a lot of these news packages talking about how much it costs to fill up the truck, $1,000, right? Diesel is well over $5, I think 50 some cents a gallon. It's going higher. There's a huge shortage right now, 30 million barrels short, according to oilprice.com. And the reason? Well, they say it's because of refiners cutting back on production during the pandemic, and they're now trying to catch up on what's going on. But Russia's also key. You can't forget that. Russia is key to this because, you know, they supply a good chunk of the oil that's used for diesel. That means semi-trucks along with ships and heavy earth-moving equipment, you know, they're going to have a hard time getting a hold of it. So what's the future look like? What are energy costs here in the country going to look like for you? How's it going to impact you, the cost of goods that you have, the groceries, the gas you put in your car, our national security? You know, energy and national security kind of go hand in hand as well. I'm joined today by Phil Flynn. He's senior market analyst and author of The Energy Report at the Price Futures Group, also a Fox contributor to Fox Business Network. You may have seen him there, and I'm just delighted to have him here with me today. If you want more information, let me give a quick plug for his website. It's pricegroup.com, pricegroup.com. Phil, it's so good to talk with you today. Thank you for making time for us.
Drew, I'm excited to be here. Are you kidding me? I'm a big Drew Mariani fan. And, you know, heck, the way you gave that intro on the gas, I should hire you as an analyst. You are good.
That's funny. Well, yeah. I know a mutual friend of yours who recommended you. I've been looking forward to our conversation. This whole energy issue is something that I've been fascinated by. It affects people on so many different levels, so many different strata. You're the expert here. How high do you think that these prices are going to go? When I saw gasoline at $6 a gallon, I would imagine diesel is going to be even higher. The J.P. Morgan analyst was saying $6. That's not something I made up. But your sense of where we're headed and how high it could go.
You know, I'm afraid the sky is the limit, and it is kind of sad because I think the only thing that is going to stop these prices is when the economy says, I can't take it anymore, right? You know, when businesses start to, you know, start cutting back or we hit a recession or people just run out of money. And it's sad, Drew, because it really didn't have to be this bad. I mean, we've had, you know, under the Biden administration, but even from a larger sense, we've had this anti fossil fuel agenda, not only here in the United States,
yeah.
but in Europe, which is really, in, I think, in large part, one of the reasons we have a war between Russia and Ukraine, because Russia started to realize that, hey, you know, they're going to be dependent on us for energy. We can do whatever we want. And, you know, they can't do much about it because we can cut off their supply.
Yeah, we're such a global, you know, village today. If you think about who, you know, who supplies wheat, who supplies oil or diesel. And, you know, this war has really created a headache. The administration, their lack of desire to drill, the green agenda, I think, has really cost people a lot financially. What happens to people who need to get around? You know, and I just think of what this is going to cost the economy in general. I don't think things are going to change, you know, in the not too distant future. But, you know, help me better understand that as well. You know, when the sale of these leases are canceled, the administration claims it's because of lack of interest. I don't buy that. There's an agenda at work, and then there's also global factors at work here. I feel like we're in the perfect storm, and I'm not quite sure how we get out of that.
You know, I think we just have to have a change in policy. You know, I look forward to November, to the midterms, and the American people are going to have to speak up, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're going to have to call their politicians. They're going to have to get on the phones and reverse, you know, this disastrous energy policy that we have in this country that doesn't make any sense, right? You know, we talk about wanting a cleaner planet. So, you know, we talk about Europe, right? So what do? They shut down, you know, nuclear power plants. Really? The only green energy, you know, the only energy source that doesn't have greenhouse gas emissions. You know, they shut down, they get wind and solar that's not as reliable. And then when they have a crisis and the wind doesn't blow and the sun doesn't shine, they burn dirtier fuels, and you really get nowhere. I think this green energy agenda really is a danger to the world, and I think that if we're going to have a cleaner world, we're going to have to do it with fossil fuels being part of the mix.
Yeah, and I agree with you. Look, I'm all about being a good steward of our environment. I think we have a moral obligation to do that, but I think we have to do it incrementally. You just can't shut off the switch and expect to go green. People can't afford $60,000, you know, cars that are electric. We just can't not drill. I mean, so much of the product that we deal with today is petroleum based. You know, a lot of people make connections to where we were in the 70s. You know, there the parallels with the 70s are there are some of them are obvious. I mean, the oil shock in the wake of the war back in 73, which follows, you know, the world's rising oil producer, Saudi Arabia. And, you know, we see what happened in 78 and 79 with the revolution in Iran. I mean, there are some parallels to what has happened in the past. Where do we stand compared to history? Is this worse and going to get worse, or are we going to get out of this and we need to supply some basic principle to it?
I think we're going to come out of it smarter, like we did, you know, during the Arab oil embargo. But we've got to change policies, right? I mean, we've got, you know, it's funny that you bring up the 70s, because the answers that the party in power has to solve this problem is using policies that failed in the 1970s, right? They're talking about price caps on oil and gasoline, you know, windfall profit taxes on the big oil companies. All of those things will just create a shortage of supply, and so it's going to make things worse, not better. The thing that we have to do, I think, in this country, listen, the green energy movement has become a religion. You know, like every fossil fuel is evil, and every alternative, wind and solar is just wonderful. But if you really sit down and you analyze this and follow the science, you know, these alternative fuels aren't that much greener in the beginning, and the when we cut back on U.S. production, we make the world a dirtier place, because the U.S. energy producer produces it cleaner, better, and we get more GDP bang out of our buck out of U.S. energy than any place on the planet. So it makes no sense to pressure our U.S. guys to produce less and look to the rest of the world to produce more.
Yeah, we also consume more energy, I would think, today than we ever have. I mean, during the geopolitical upheaval of the 70s, the physical supply of oil from the world's reserves, I don't think that was ever an issue. But now you've got you know, the Asian market, there's this Asian energy demand. It's vastly higher than it was back then. And, you know, demand for gas and coal is, as well, I think, may, you know, exceed worldwide output over the next few years. So we've entered a time, I think, when countries will have to compete for the world's remaining fossil fuels. I mean, you're the expert here, so correct me. I'm just looking at the big picture. I'm trying to zoom out here and say, you know, what are governments going to do? How abundant are these resources? I mean, we're shutting down our own natural resources here. We should be drilling. Your thoughts on that? I mean, as you look, you got India, you've got the Asian world. There's new geopolitical alliances. Russia. I mean, how does this all play out?
You know, the first thing I want to say is that the U.S. energy consumers, you know, everybody wants us to feel guilty because the United States, you know, we only have, you know, 5% of the world's population and we consume 25% of the supply. Right. We should be proud of that because we're getting a lot of economic bang for our buck. We're doing it more efficiently than any other place in the world. And I think big picture right now, you're right. You know, back in the 70s, the U.S. was the only game in town, right? Then we had the oil embargo, and then all of a sudden we were shocked into a situation where all of a sudden we realized that, you know, we had to become more fuel efficient, and people were afraid, oh my gosh, the world's going to run out of oil and stuff. But that didn't happen because of U.S. technology. Yeah. You know, we broke the code.
Great point.
You know, when everybody said we couldn't do it, we did it anyway. Yeah. And that's why I want to give some hope to us because, amen. Listen, I believe if we work with the U.S. energy industry, not demonize them, they're going to have the answers for the green energy transition. We can't say, hey, these guys are the bad guys. All fossil fuels are bad. Shut down pipelines. You know, that doesn't make any sense because if you do that, you're just going to hurt the poor and middle class. And they are paying the bulk of the mistakes we've made into this green energy transition.
That's so true. You know, and I wonder, I've been following just easily the constant rise of it right now. And I forget who it said. I read somewhere that, you know, diesel had been characterized as kind of the lifeblood of the global economy. I mean, it's vital for construction and mining and, of course, agriculture and transportation. And right now, the U.S. stockpile of diesel fuel is, I think, at a two-decade low as fuel prices are hitting the, you know, an all-time high. And then, you know, people got to realize, oh, well, I don't use diesel. I don't care. Well, diesel is what brings that food to the grocery store, that product to your shelf or to your front door. As diesel prices go up from everything from agriculture to transportation, I mean, the cost of life just goes up as well. So I think there was a CEO of United Refining. That's who I was reading earlier today. He said that he wouldn't be surprised if we see diesel being rationed on the East Coast this summer. Any thoughts on that? What do you see happening?
I think that's a real possibility because supplies are so tight. And you're right, diesel's everywhere. We drive on diesel. You know, a derivative of diesels is what we make our roads on, you know, and asphalt. So it's so important. And this is another problem. One of the reasons why you have a shortage of diesel is because we consider diesel a dirty fuel. And it is a dirtier fuel, right? But we've learned to burn it more cleanly. But because of the green energy movement, we've shut down refining capacity, and we took this fuel for granted. We just assumed, you know, hey, we can replace it with anything else. Well, you can't, and we're starting to find that out. And I think if you look at what's happening in the diesel market right now, we've shut down many refineries. We can't get them reopened. But also geopolitics, right? We used to get a lot of the oil that we made for diesel. You need a heavier oil. We generally got that from Venezuela. We put sanctions on Venezuela. Right. So then we went to Russia. Mm-hmm. Hey, Russia, let's go to Russia. We've cut off that supply. Now, when you look at where we're getting this fuel, there's not a lot of places. In fact, the Biden administration today is talking about, because they're getting so desperate, you know, to reopen talks with Venezuela to maybe lift some sanctions so we can get some diesel. So, you know, why aren't they asking the U.S. producers? I just don't get it.
I'm with you, Phil. I'm totally with you. Look, let's take a few calls. If you want to join us, the number's 888-914-9149. I only have my guest today, Phil Flynn, just for a few minutes. So feel free to dial in. 888-914-9149. We'll take your calls, questions, and comments. Mike in Chicago, you are on the air. Good afternoon.
Hello, how you doing? So I'm thinking we should go more towards hydrogen. That seems like the most abundant element we have, and it's a combustion engine. I don't see why we're not putting a lot more time and energy into that kind of research.
All right, so alternative energies. Phil, your thought.
Right.
Love to get your take.
I think hydrogen is definitely in our future. There's a lot of strides that people are looking at that, but I don't think it's ready for prime time yet. We're not just seeing the technology being at the place from the, both the production side and the practical use side. But I think you're absolutely right. In our future, that is there. It's just not ready for prime time just yet.
Phil, I'm curious about your view on the relationship between our energy, right? Energy independence and national security. Does that concern you at all where we are right now in our own national security?
It does. And you know, and I don't think, you know, if you look at every major conflict in the globe in the last century, World War I, World War II, a lot of times the winner came down to the production of energy, right? You know, I mean, I remember George Patton say, boy, if I had a few more gallons of gas, I could march right into Germany or you know, the nuclear bomb. I mean, you know, so energy is such a critical part of national security, and we've lost that in this country. In fact, one of the biggest shocks to our country was the oil embargo, right? And we spent generations. We got to get off foreign oil because they can cut us off at any time and destroy our economy. Then we did it, and then we're like, oh, let's just give it away. You know, let's reverse this and become more dependent on other countries, which is just crazy. I think people have a short memory. They don't remember how history works. And I really called the war in Ukraine really the first war of the Green New Deal, you know, because I really believe that Vladimir Putin, you know, has been planning this for decades, right? You know, when Germany, he's talking to Germany for years, and he's saying, yeah, go ahead, shut all your nuclear power plants. Don't worry, we've got your back till you get your windmills built up. And, you know, and Europe, wind and solar, replace those old dirty coal plants. And, you know, and now we see, you know, how dangerous that is. And right now, even with all the atrocities that are happening in the Ukraine, you know, they're still sending checks to Vladimir Putin on a daily basis, billions of dollars, you know, and he's taunting Europe saying, go ahead, go ahead, if you want, I can cut off your supply, no problem. Basically taunting them and saying, hey, I'm still making money, I'm still selling oil, and if you don't want it, I can find a buyer for it. This is crazy. Listen, I know the biggest fear we put into Russia and OPEC was when the U.S. shale producers were producing record amounts of oil. That scared OPEC and Russia more than anything. And I think if we get back to that, we'll be dealing from a geopolitical point of strength as opposed to weakness, which is what we are doing now.
You saw it play out when Russia went into Ukraine, too, how Germany, you know, they were sending, you know, helmets. They really weren't participating in NATO's defense there because they had the Nord Stream pipeline there. It was, what, 95% complete? And
they're
reliant on Russia. And when you're relying on somebody for energy, they have a certain power over you. They really do. And it does affect the dynamics, the interplay, the geopolitical, you know, interplay of your nation and its security. Patrick in Monterey, California, you're on the air with Phil Flynn. Thank you for calling in. Go right ahead.
Yeah, why don't they use natural gas? The city, my buses in my city use natural gas.
All right.
I think it's a great idea. I think that's an alternative fuel that is very viable. The United States has the potential and is or is near the biggest producer in the world. You know, I think it's kind of really funny because I think out in Monterey, California, aren't they trying to cancel natural gas buildings out your way? I think they are. And so, yeah, I mean, listen, I think natural gas fuels, compressed natural gas is a great fuel. A lot of small businesses use that to this day. And yeah, it's a great fuel, and it's one that we can make here at home. So I think compressed natural gas is part of the answer. You know, I think it's kind of funny. You know, we have President Biden saying we have to get off fossil fuels and all that stuff. And then all of a sudden we have a crisis in Europe. What does President Biden do? He promises more U.S. fossil fuels from America, natural gas. Yep. We're going to export every molecule of natural gas. you know, I think it's kind of funny. If you're a green energy guy, why isn't he sending them green energy fuel?
Right.
I don't get it.
I love it.
He's sending them fossil fuels.
That's,
you know, it's like, all right.
So true.
So it's kind of hypocritical, yeah. But hey, what can I say?
Hey, Phil, thank you for making time for us today. I really enjoy our conversation. Of course, your insight. If people want to follow your work or follow you, what's the best way to do that? Pricegroup.com or is there a Twitter handle?
Just email me. Well, my Twitter handle is @EnergyPhilFlynn, or email me. I do a little daily note, no cost, no obligation, the Phil Flynn Energy Report. Just email me your email address, and I'll send it out to you every day.
Sounds great. It's Phil Flynn, Senior Market Analyst and author of The Energy Report at the Price Futures Group. We'll catch up again soon. Again, really enjoyed having this opportunity to talk with you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Drew. It was great to be on.
God bless you. It is about 19 minutes before the top of the hour. When I come back, let's change gears. There was a big hearing today on Capitol Hill regarding UFOs. Mike Gallagher, who is a congressman from Wisconsin, asked an interesting question. He asked about this event. You know, of course, we have these UFO sightings on the USS Nimitz and some things that are really hard to explain. There are some that have been explained away, but there are some that, boy, if we can't explain them, and they are technological leaps or advancements from China, Russia, you know, maybe other adversaries, it could leave us in terms of a very vulnerable position when it comes to national security. If they are something else, what could they be? Astronomical anomalies? Or could they be alien? Can they be intelligent life somewhere else? And what does that mean? So it's been a generation since this has gone down. Big developments here. Congressman Gallagher, as I was about to say, he asked a question about an event that took place where red orbs appeared to hover over nuclear missile bases or arsenals that we had, and turn the nuclear weapons on and turn them off. I don't think that's an astronomical anomaly, do you? When I come back, I'll fill you in on what went down today. We'll talk a little bit about one of the great mysteries of our day. Stay with me.
Did you like what Drew and the guest had to say? Get caught up on this conversation and all the others by going to the Relevant Radio Archives. Just search for The Drew Mariani Show.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Since the early 2000s, we have seen an increasing number of unauthorized and or unidentified aircraft or objects in military-controlled training areas and training ranges and other designated airspace. Reports of sightings are frequent and continuing. We attribute this increase in reporting to a number of factors, including our work to destigmatize reporting, an increase in the number of new systems such as quadcopters and unmanned aerial systems that are in our airspace, identification of what we can classify as clutter, Mylar balloons and other types of air trash, and improvements in the capabilities of our various sensors to detect things in our airspace.
The Drew Mariani Show.
Yeah, that was Scott Bray. He is the U.S. Naval Intelligence Deputy Director. Big hearing today on Capitol Hill on the rise of what they call UAPs, Unidentified Aerial Phenomenon. A lot happening in the last couple years, really, if you think about it, last few decades. There's a theory on that, too. And they brought that forward. Why are we seeing so many? Well, we got better cameras, right? You know, we're capturing more people are aware of this. Well, there may be some logical explanations for some of this as well. The House held a hearing today. It's the first of its kind, really, in a generation, they're saying, in years. And they held it on UFOs. And who's not fascinated by it? I mean, it's one of the great mysteries of our day. Did God create us and we are alone in the universe? That, you know, galaxy after galaxy is our playground to leave this planet and perhaps fertilize and, you know, perhaps life will go on for a very long time? Or did God, you know, create other intelligent life? You know, I just think of the caveman, right? The guy who crawled from the plains of Africa, right? And he made his way to the sea. And then as man developed, we sailed the sea and we discovered a new world. Whoever thought there would be a new world, right? With new and indigenous people. Now we've taken to the sky and ultimately to the heavens. Will we discover, as we did the new world, new worlds? It's food for thought. I don't know. The church hasn't ruled definitively one way or the other. Raised a lot of theological questions. We won't get into all those today. We've discussed this in the past. You could do a quick search for UFOs or UAPs in my archives, and I've had Vatican astronomers. I've had former astronauts. We've dealt with the morality and the would they need to be evangelized? Would they need to be baptized? You know, what kind of creatures would they? Would they be rational? I mean, we got into a lot of those issues. Some people think this is a bunch of hooey, right? Now, what's Congress wasting time for talking about UFOs, UAPs? Come on. The Pentagon is taking this pretty seriously. And I think rightly so. I think they should. I mean, it's a national security issue for us. There have been all sorts of reports, and we've talked about them as well, especially of Navy crews sighting these things, flying after them, and then objects, that not just in the air. We've got submersibles, too. And what a great place. If you're intelligent life, and I'm just brainstorming here, right? You're not going to hide necessarily in a cornfield, right? What's one of the better places to hide? It's 3/4 of the planet is covered in water. And there have been sightings below the surface of water that there have been crafts. I forget the title for these things. These SU, they're something to deal with. I don't know. Maybe now you can find the term or Tom on the term for these crafts that can move at great speed underwater. And they're competent eyewitnesses. Many of these Navy pilots have seen them come from the ocean upward. A lot of sightings off the west coast of the United States in different places, but they seem to be able to move through USOs. Thank you. Thank you very much. Maggie, what's that stand for again? USO? It's something, I don't know. Unidentified Submersible Object, I think is what it stands for. But, there are reports of Navy sightings see these objects. So one of the most famous cases is the case of the USS Nimitz a few years ago. But there are stories that date back well beyond that, back to the 60s, back to the 40s, right? You got Roswell. And some would claim there were sightings even before that. There was one incident called Maelstrom, the Maelstrom incident, where a UFO allegedly was situated over an area where we had these intercontinental ballistic missiles with nuclear weapons. And this happened in the 60s, right? And you got to think about the Cold War. You have to think about the race for nuclear weapons. We had the ability, we still have the ability, to destroy the planet, to blow it up, to end life as we know it. If we ever got into a nuclear exchange, the whole world would suffer with these. So back, and I don't know the exact date, I think it was in the 60s. It was known very famously, you can do a search for it, for the Maelstrom incident, where competent eyewitnesses saw UFOs hovering, these unidentified objects, over an area where we had intercontinental ballistic missiles with nuclear weapons on them. And to the fear and the fright of everybody there, all of a sudden, missile after missile began to turn on, became live. They were offline. 10 of these ICBMs became live. Now, who's turning them on? What does the U.S. do? Imagine if some force, some intelligence was able to fire, if they could turn them on, what if they could launch them? It could mean the end of life as we know it. Russia would see this as a direct attack. This is the 1960s. And before we know it, there would be the mutually assured destruction of not just nations, I believe the world. Congressman Mike Gallagher, he's a congressman from Wisconsin. He raised this question. I'm really glad he did. I didn't get a chance to watch it. I'm a geek. I'm going to watch this a little bit later tonight when I go home. I'm fascinated by it. He actually pressed two Pentagon officials on the issue today. What's interesting is, and I don't believe this, they say, we haven't really investigated that incident. Yeah, right. Yeah, you come on. 10 ICBM missiles, are turned on. They're taken offline, right? You've got a force that can turn them on or turn them off. And you're not going to investigate that? I don't think so. I think you are all over that. You're like peanut butter on jelly. You know, you are all over that. I don't understand if it's true why they wouldn't. You know, so one official told Congressman Gallagher that if they got an official request, they might look into it. Which I don't understand, because if one of the main defenses of our country is taken offline, something is seen hovering over the site. I just think it's a matter of national security. We should know what happened. Was it an electronic failure? Was it something else that was gone on there? I don't know. Raises a lot of questions. I don't know where you stand on the issues. You know, one of the things I just find fascinating, I'll throw it out. You know, there's these triangle-shaped UFOs that they see. They've had recorded. They've seen the glimmer. They seem to flash. You know, they're way high. And you think it's a triangle. It doesn't look like an astronomical anomaly. But it may just very well be that. I was reading a report earlier, right before I came on the air today. And in this particular Pentagon meeting, they collected around 400 reports, and they went through they showed a number of Congress people what was going on. Scott Bray, who's the deputy director of the U.S. Naval Intelligence, he was the one who was testifying. They very calm, very authoritative. You know, they said they've known about this stuff for well over half a century now. But he says, you know, the increased number of sightings, why are we seeing so many of these? Why are they being reported? Well, they're growing in popularity. He says some of the things we might be seeing, these triangles, might be what they call quadcopters and drones, right? It could be not alien, but it could be enemies. Maybe China, maybe Russia, maybe somebody's putting drones up. We've flown drones over foreign nations and adversaries, I'm sure. They say we're also getting, you know, more of these reports. We have updates now in sensor technologies, and we're increasing, you know, in the skies. If you think about it, the aerial clutter that's out there, we got Mylar balloons, there's all sorts of different satellites, there's all sorts of stuff that are out there. So that might be one of the reasons. Plus, there's been a decrease in the stigma surrounding reportings. A lot of pilots have claimed to have seen things. I've spoken to pilots who have claimed to have seen stuff when they were in air that they don't have an explanation for. I always think, well, is it something like Tom Jones, who's an astronaut? He was on the program with me, oh, I don't know, 6 months ago, a year ago. I always ask these astronauts, what do you see? You're in a space station. What, you know, what's it like? He says there's a lot about the Earth that we still do not know. You know, we have these balls of electricity and all these different things that sometimes manifest. So maybe these triangles, these flashings, maybe it's a drone. Maybe it's an astronomical anomaly. Maybe it's an alien. Maybe it's intelligent life. A lot of the sightings remain unexplained. You know, there's a few of these they cannot explain away. They just can't do it. There's no explanation for it yet. Doesn't mean our science won't unlock that mystery. But he showed the Congress two different videos that have been circulated online. One involved video taken from the cockpit of a Navy aircraft showing a very small reflective sphere, and it was zooming by the window. It was a really short video, and the last just a few seconds, but it was meant to illustrate how little evidence they have to deal with. I mean, that might be the only glimpse of this UFO that they have, and that's all they have to do. That's all they have to work with. So it's a tough job. I want to give them the benefit of the doubt. But you know, one of the most famous cases was the case of the Nimitz, right? That was a stunning encounter. The other thing, too, just one side note here. I don't want to belabor this point too much. DARPA, right? I wonder if some of these are from our dark, you know, from U.S. intelligence. And I often made this comparison. When the stealth bomber was designed, I mean, think of what aircraft looked before the stealth came out. You know how cool the stealth bomber looks? Like no real wing shape. It's more like a triangle. It's got all these weird contours. I watched a documentary on the stealth bomber. When stealth was done, the U.S. was testing. This is a U.S. creation. And it said to the Army, it said, set up your best radar detectors and see if you can track us. At 1 p.m., we're going to fly at 1,300 hour. We're going to fly over this ridge. And let us know when we fly over. We're going to see when you can detect us. We're going to be doing this. And they gave a time window. Well, you know, the Air Force gets their stealth bomber out. They fly at a high speed or whatever it is. The best radar people have been set up in position. They know the trajectory of this thing's supposed to be coming. It was invisible to our radar. It was invisible, right? Of course, then we saw how it was used later in the Gulf War, right? It was an advance, a leap in technology to evade radar. We never had anything like that. It was invisible, if you think about it. Not today. You know, we see a lot of other countries now taking this technology. What if some of this stuff, like the Tic Tac, that could move at unbelievable speeds and make moves at G-force that defy the laws of science? What if this is something in our own arsenal? That's another possibility to think about, too. Maybe this is developed by DARPA or by Russia or by China. You know, who knows? It's food for thought. You're going to see, I'm sure, a lot of this a little bit later. But when these UAPs, unidentified aerial phenomena, exhibit these unusual flight characteristics, it could be anything from sensor errors to spoofing to observer misperception, or it could be real. That is the other thing to think about. It could be real. I guess only, you know, time will tell. That's for sure. So food for thought for you. Anyway, hey, thank you for allowing me to be part of your afternoon. It has been great to talk with you. We got a lot more to talk about. I could talk to you half an hour about this, but if you missed any part of the conversation, you can always go to the archives, check out the Drew Mariani Show there, or where podcasts are heard. Don't forget to get information on the trip. If you want more information on the trip to Israel that I'm going on, you can find that at relevantradio.com/pilgrimage. Should be pretty cool. Till tomorrow. May God bless you. Have a great day.